decided to tell him about the great day I had, he jumped in first and fired me. And that was probably the biggest shock I've ever had of my entire life. And that's when I learned that nobody was going to look out for my financial well-being but me. If you wanted to grow a giant pumpkin, first identify the strongest pumpkin early on, cut off all those other pumpkins off the vine so all of the nutrients and goes to that pumpkin, and that's how you grow. I did the same thing. I hung up all the other businesses. I focused on real estate.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Today, we're going to play around a little bit into what real estate investing can do for you as part of your entrepreneurial journey. Here we do. We do all this stuff to make sure we make enough money for whatever we're trying to do, our families, our loved ones, ourselves. Hey, your choice there. But there's a lot of conversations around the value of doing real estate investing. So we went out and found an expert in this space. So I'd like to introduce you to Brandon Cobb of HBG Capital. Yay, I got the initials right. And I'm really excited to have you here, Brandon. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, AJ, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm always happy to have another fellow Southerner on the show too. I may have been born in New York, but I'm a Gamecock by grace of God. So even though my accent disappeared a long time ago, I do like...
Hey, I've heard that being Southern is trending right now. It's like, cool. Apparently my mom, she keeps up with all that. And over the holidays, she was like, you know, did you know it's cool to be a Southern right now? It's like trending. I was like, I didn't know that, but hey, I'll take it.
You're from a beautiful part. I love Tennessee. I've had some really great travel through it. So you're in a beautiful part of the country. You know, it's a nice area, Tennessee there.
We're very blessed. It is something that I was pretty much raised here, raised in Memphis, yeah. Tennessee, went to school at UT. So, you know, I bleed orange. I've been in Nashville the past like 11 years, and I just didn't realize how lucky I had it. Not just from the business standpoint, investing and doing real estate, Nashville's like booming, but just the demographics and the hiking and the people and how clean it is and the crime. Like I do feel like I hit the demographic jackpot. Not just saying that, I do feel like Nashville's like my home. I love this area.
When this opportunity to talk with you came up, I got really fascinated kind of going through your background. Because I love it that you started off in kind of what looks like you were on a progressive sales role. Yeah, you took a couple of different sales roles, and then you got into real estate, and then you got into like real estate development. And then a couple of years ago into this HBG Capital, more focused on helping other business people invest along with you into different properties, if I'm getting that right. But I'm really curious. One, maybe talk a little bit about from buying properties yourself to doing development. It's a nice little progression you have going and then to getting here. Can you kind of just talk about that for us?
Yeah. So, you know, today we primarily focused on working with the local municipalities to identify parcels of land that are not the highest and best use. And we add value to it through a rezone process, taking it from one or two homes to 100 homes. Or taking it through the entitlement process and getting everything approved. And so our focus is on entry-level new construction housing right here in Middle Tennessee. We really like that asset class. We think it's got a great runway. Everyone talks about how you know affordable housing is just not a thing. You can't find it anywhere. Yeah. And like that's where we want to be. We want to be in that space for not only construction, but you know, doing the rental space as well, another asset class we're looking to acquire. But once upon a time, that wasn't the case. I was in medical device sales. And unlike a lot of entrepreneurs, I'd say that I did not have a dream to be an entrepreneur. I actually loved what I did. I thought that wearing scrubs every single day as a young guy in his mid-20s, working with OR surgeons every single day, being in the hospital setting and getting to be able to make a difference in the patient's life was super, super cool. I had my dream job. I had everything. And so I got sat down one Friday afternoon in June. It was one of those days where spring is like just the first day of spring, like it's pushing through. It's where you want to like sit outside and like soak in the sunshine. And it was 5 o'clock on a Friday, and my boss sits me down and excited to tell him about the great day I had. He jumped in first and fired me. And that was probably the biggest shock I've ever had of my entire life. And, 3 hours later after the shock wore off and I was calling all my friends and family, I was like, man, you know, it's just, it's no hard feelings. He had to do what he had to do, and that was best for him. And that's when I learned that nobody was going to look out for my financial well-being but me. And I'm sure a lot of people in your audience have probably shared some similar aha moment, which is why they chose to go in business for themselves. But I'm not a natural entrepreneur. I gave myself a 6-month ultimatum. I started 4 or 5 different businesses. I wanted to be the next Tony Robbins, the next life coach. I had a motivational blog, had a course on how to try to break into medical sales. And this whole thing on the side called real estate. Well, real estate was the first one that showed an opportunity to produce income. And as soon as that happened, I'm a big fan of Michael Michalowicz's books, The Pumpkin Plan. He's like, if you want to grow a giant pumpkin, first identify the strongest pumpkin early on, cut off all those other pumpkins off the vine so all of the nutrients and goes to that pumpkin, and that's how you grow. I did the same thing. I hung up all the other businesses. I focused on real estate, starting flipping houses, built that business up to doing probably about 30, 40 rehabs and wholesales a year, and saw an opportunity to get new construction when we literally rebuilt a house that caught fire. Like the whole second floor was completely burned down. And we're like, well, we can buy this house for less than what the land is worth. And I'm pretty sure the first floor is okay. So like, what if we just cut out all the black stuff, hire a structural engineer, get the city involved, you know, make sure that it's safe and just rebuild it. And we built and sold that house in 7 months, whereas it took us 8 months around the corner to rehab a full gut flip, which was down to the studs, and just took a whole lot more to do. And we said, wait a minute. We made 3 times as much money building this house, pretty much new, as opposed to rehabbing this house. Why are we rehabbing houses? And so that was kind of our transition into doing new construction. And so, you know, we found our bread and butter, which was we like to be at that entry level price point. And we said it's just as easy to build 30 or 40 homes in one area as it is to build 1 or 2 houses in one spot, but be spread out all over the city. So we're doing a lot of infill, new construction spec. It was a lot of spread out. So, well, hang on, let's just send the project managers to the same spot every day. I bet we get it done faster. I bet we get better pricing with subs. I bet the subs like it more. And I bet we build it faster. And so that's what started our journey into working with the local cities to identify those parcels of land, rezone them to higher density. That's where we really add our value, is we work with the cities. We work with the sellers, we explain the process, and we add value through force appreciating it through that rezone or that entitlement process. And so it's just been this journey where we've kind of sort of fell into a lot of different things by noticing where the opportunities were. And kind of like your guys in the audience that listen to this and own businesses, you got to pivot. And so, you know, eventually there came a point where we're like, dude, we've got all of our own money sunk in these projects. We've got to start reaching out to other people. And then that's how the whole HBG Capital brand was born.
Yeah. And it is just so fascinating, because it's like one thing, if you haven't lived in the South, but definitely in the past 20 years, where it's like you had these like small little cities that then would have small towns out there, but it would be empty between them. And now what's happening is, as people are moving down South for whatever reason, besides maybe being cool, it is this idea that like there's taxes, opportunity, whatever the reason that people are moving. Do you ever look at like, all right, as we continue going down, we believe there's an ongoing runway to do this for the rest of your journey? Or are you thinking maybe at some point you go even broader and go outside Middle Tennessee?
Yeah, great question. Right now, there's a ton of opportunity in Middle Tennessee. You know, we're doing somewhere around 24 million of development per year. I don't see any reason why we can't get it to 100 with the right people. But, you know, to your point, could it change down the road? We're always tracking what's going on at a higher level. And, you know, right now, we feel like we've got a pretty good runway in the area we're in, Nashville, and the asset we're in, entry-level housing. And so a couple of the big drivers behind that from a very macro perspective, one of the reasons we're very bullish on Nashville is, one is we want insulation against any kind of economic shifts. We just had a historic black swan event with interest rates. It's affected a lot of things. It's affected a lot of asset classes. but different areas are going to be affected differently from it. And some aren't going to be as experience as much harm as some other areas. So you really want to be in an area where you've got money moving into it. You know, from a high level, that's what I want to see. I want to see money moving into an area. I want to see money moving into a specific asset class. We know money is moving into Nashville because it's been one of the top 10 fastest growing cities in the United States the past six, 7 years. When you have money moving to a spot, you've got people moving in there, people bring money. It doesn't have income taxes. And so that's incentivizing a lot of businesses to move here. Businesses move here, money moves here. And then what's really interesting, you have this great migration to the South is what you're saying. You're like, is it cool? Yeah. What is it? Well, I would argue there was a pretty big event here recently in the past couple of years that revealed this situation, these circumstances that everybody kind of knew was there, but it made it blatantly obvious. And that is, you've got business-friendly states and you have non-business-friendly states. You've got tax-friendly states and you've got non-tax-friendly states. And COVID just revealed this environment, made it very obvious. And so there's this huge migration from high-tax states, from very government-involved states. I'll use that lingo, like, you know, New York, California, you know, New Jersey, and they're just sick of it. And so when you can move to a state, not have any income taxes, and they didn't shut everything down like Florida, Texas, Tennessee, you know, during 2020, 2021, that excites businesses to move here. And it doesn't just excite businesses to move here. If you're an institutional player and you've got billions of dollars tied up in these cities, then all of a sudden the government shuts down apartments. It shuts down your ability to collect rents from tenants. It shuts down your ability to keep your doors open. Institutional money doesn't give you second chances. And so since COVID, we've seen literally billions of dollars pour into Nashville as revealed by the downtown skyline because it's looking for a safe haven in the event that you get some other event. So from a macro level, Nashville has a lot of really good things going for it. And if you were to drill down and kind of look at it a little bit more microscopically, you'd notice that it's got year-round tourism. It's Music City capital of the world. It's got fantastic demographics. There's a lot to do. The people are great. There's a lot of things to do. And then just taking it a step further and looking at, okay, you've got a great area where money's moving into it. How can you further insulate that? What asset class can you be in that things are going to continue to put money towards? And for us, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. Everybody sort of knows this, but that entry-level housing, less than 10% of homes being built today are for entry-level homebuyers. And you've got over 33% of the home buying population, millennials, new of age, they're at prime home buying age, and they're struggling to afford things. This is why you're seeing rents go pretty wild right now. There's a really cool chart. If you pull it up, it's like rent to purchase cost. The gap is insane right now. It's never been higher. And so you're only going to see rents go up. So if we can be in that space and cater to that space, it gives us a good feeling and a sense of comfort that we're going to be good at least for the next four or five years. Now, again, some crazy things could happen if Nashville starts charging, you know, income taxes and, you know, we have another COVID and they shut everything down. Our investment thesis would change. But right now it does look like it's got a good runway.
It does. And what's interesting is between that gap of like building and there's also the rentability versus purchase, you know, the tendency is still one of the few areas left in the country with the increase of interest rates where it is still within, you know, obviously your own individual income and house price and all that, but it is still favoring purchasing over renting because like 3 years ago, it was like you only have to live here for, you live 2 years before you've earned back that overall cost, you know, the carrying cost of buying versus renting. And now all of a sudden it's like 15 years. Not that, everyone, it depends on where, but if you were going to purchase now. So it is really interesting how different areas, and there will be transitions as government things, tech, all that changes, but it's in a good position. Before we get into sort of the value of looking at this type of investment for a business owner, one thing you said, and I would love to kind of maybe explore this in what we do. You're in this growth phase. You are growing as fast as you can to kind of build this. And you know, you're saying, hey, there is this runway towards 100, but you got to find the right people. What does it mean for you? Like, I always used to say, when you're rubbing sticks together and starting a business, it's about finding just the people who are good to work with and are going to try hard. Just good people doing good things. But as you move up the ladder, you still need good people, but you need that kind of specialization. So what are you looking when you talk about finding the right people? What does that mean for you? And how are you finding that changing?
Yeah, great question. So what got us here to 20 million is not what's going to get us to 100 million. Right. You know, we're at the point where we're officially breaking the system. Right. And so I think that a lot of listeners can probably relate to this, where you put the right people in the right place, you put the right systems, and you start growing it and growing it, and everything's great. And then you hit this plateau and things maybe even don't start going well. And you're like, wait a minute, what happened? This has worked so well. What's going on? It might even be the same people, because you hit an inflection point. And that's kind of where we're at right now, where I love this concept of 10X is easier than 2X. There's a really good book that Dan Sullivan wrote, co-authored by Benjamin Hardy, wrote a bunch of great books.
Do you
do
Dan Sullivan's coaching program? Have you done that?
I have not done it. Cool. Strategic coach. I've heard good things about it, but I'm a big mastermind fan.
Yeah.
Love his stuff. So this concept, he did a really good job of is Grant Cardone wrote this book, 10X, and he popularized this whole 10X concept, you know, 10X your business, 10X your life, yada, yada, yada. And it's exciting, right? It's a hype book. It gets y'all motivated, it gets y'all energetic. And then what happens afterwards? You're like, oh, dude, 10X, you know, like, oh, man, do I got to make 10X the employees? I got to have the 10 times the amount of phone calls? Like, what does that look like exactly? You know, there's no plan. It's like a hype thing, where what Benjamin Hardy did really well in this book was he broke down what that really meant and why 10X is actually easier than 2X. And in that book, what he talks about is if you try to 2X a business and you're like, all right, you know, I'm going to go from a million to 2 million or 2 million to 4 million, it's a linear growth pattern. We think, oh God, kind of like what I was just talking about in reference to Grant's book is, I got to make 2 times the amount of phone calls. I got 2 times the amount of people I got to hire. I got 2 times the amount of, you know, money I got to raise, whatever that is. And you're already pushed to your max as an entrepreneur, right? And the idea fails. It falls because you think of just 2Xing everything and you're like, I don't want to do that, dude. My life's already just to the brim. Mm-hmm. But he said 10X it. And for me, let's just use this as an example. You know, we did 40 houses in a year. If I 10X that, then that's 400 houses. We developed about 150 entry-level lots and sold them to entry-level builders this year. That would be 1,500 lots. And I say, well, how do I need to get there? And all of a sudden, when you do that, when you perform that little 10X your current results exercise, it forces you to stop thinking linearly and you have to now think exponentially. So if I were thinking 2X, I would think, okay, I need to go hire another project manager with more experience to take on, you know, twice as many homes. I need to get another construction coordinator. I need to go and I need to hire another materials manager to be able to go out and source materials and reduce our cost, right? It's 2X thinking, where if it's 10X, and this is why we're making changes right now and what we're doing, There's no way that I want to build the team that it takes to do that. I see what my team looks like and I see the amount of people and the amount of management, everything. And I'm thinking, is there another way? And the correct answer is yes. So if you model your growth off like private equity companies that are really good at identifying world-class operators and partnering with those world-class operators, they're just the capital piece and they bring in some value. I'm looking to do the same thing. So I'm actually scaling down our GC business and future development opportunities. We're now partnering with builders who no longer can also not only reduce my overhead, because I don't have a whole bunch of guys on salary anymore and a bunch of software systems I'm paying for, not only build it for less because they've been, you know, building for 20 plus years. Again, you know, I've only been in business for 7 years, but these guys have been building houses, you know, 3 times longer than I've just been in business, right? And they can do it quicker. That's a value add play. And that's what I call a strategic partner. So I'm really focused on going forward. If I can't bring somebody into my business that doesn't teach me things that I don't know about the role I'm hiring for, or show me how to make it better, I'm not hiring those people. one of the biggest mistakes I made in the past when hiring people is I would build out their onboarding guides and I would kind of like put them in a box. If I'm not bringing somebody on board now that builds out their own onboarding guide and shows me how a position should be run and how to do it during that interview process as we're kind of courting each other and I'm showing them what they should do and they're building out a plan of how to make it better, I don't hire that person. So I'm all in on strategic partnerships going forward, because to get to, you know, even a 5X right now, to get to 100 million per year, I've got to bring on outside partners to help with our developments. We're really good at two things. We're really good at working with local municipalities to do the land rezoning and entitlement. That's where we go out and we find parcels from 50 to 250 units. We're very good at that. We've got that built. And now we notice that the GC portion is sucking a lot of our time. And if we just spent time in our unique ability, which is going out and finding those deals and raising capitals for those deals, those opportunities, we could very easily get to 100 million. And that's what's worked really well for us so far.
Hey, one quick thing, because then I want to do talk about how you're shifting your mindset more to business model manipulation versus business growth. But first, I'm going to make a quick assumption. GC is general contractor.
Yeah, general contractor. Yeah, I was using some lingo there in the industry.
Right, well, I do it all the time. And yeah, and I'm an analytics and data guy. So you get me talking about how do you build charts and yeah, how do you analyze stuff? I'll be like, oh yeah. It's like, so, you know, I agree. There's 10X, there's the 50 things you're trying to do and cross out the bottom 48 and just focus on, yeah, it's like again and again, asking yourself and putting yourself in a position that, yes, you have to make sure what you do creates your foundation. You need a living. We all need to make sure we can create the foundation. But once you get there as an entrepreneur, I think that's one of the coolest things we get to do is figure out what we want to do with it. And that exploration of our efforts and the focus of our efforts, because that has the biggest impact of what we can do. Yeah, you're looking at how you expand the pie, not just how you like get a better slice out of it. What are you finding is the hardest part about doing this approach of like, all right, we'll just call it 10Xing the business model? What's becoming the most difficult issue you have to face to transition into that?
Yeah. Well, you know, to your point, we did reduce a lot of risk going forward by doing it ourselves, right? That was one of the reasons why we started our own GC firm, is it's what allowed us to get here, right? We didn't have to pay the GC fees. We had a lot more profit on the deals. We reduced the risk of a bad deal happening. It seems like everybody who's built a house seems to have some kind of GC horror story. And we're like, all right, well, we know what not to do. We're not going to do that. We're going to, you know, do it ourselves, because my partner had a construction background. I had a sales background. So it was a really, really unique fit there. Good. But right now it's making that transition. It's being able to select great builder partners, great development partners. You know, we're working on a, you know, 43 townhome development that we didn't do any work to find it. Somebody saw that we did it and brought it to us. And so I'm like, well, that's interesting. There's another way to potentially work together with other people that is on the acquisition side of things. So right now it's finding great partners. That's the toughest thing that I'm focused on, is finding great partners. And so that takes a lot of due diligence. It takes a lot of getting used to people, because, you know, it's like a marriage, right? You know, when they're signed up as a GP on that deal, you got to be very comfortable with them and make sure that they're the right fit and they can perform, because you're putting your investors, you know, capital on the line, right? And so that's what's become the new problem that we have to solve. But luckily, we know where all of the setbacks are, because we are a GC firm. We know how, what to look for. We know what questions to ask. We know, you know, like, 'cause I want them to open up their books. You know, I ask everyone to open up their books who were, you know, kind of courting, and I know what to look for to see if they're properly running thing, how tight of a ship they are, how they send over budgets. So luckily our experience as a general contractor is also the same skill set and experience that will allow us to choose the right partners going forward. So that's the biggest problem right now, is I've got a couple guys that we're courting, we're looking at, we're about to start some deals together, and I'm excited to see how that goes.
Very cool. Finding the right partners is very difficult. Let's look at it then from the other side. Folks like me who really are interested in investing in real estate, we have our business, we have our cash flow. Looking at it as a diversification, as I always joke, it's like, if I go look for information on something, at least until the AI overlords take over, you know, it's like 50 million opinions. Oh yeah. And it's getting better and better. I mean, kind of like, okay, you know what? Yeah. It would be, you know, that whole meme, like, just take my money. Except they don't care. You know? It's like, all right, are we really going to the matrix? You just want my body heat for electricity? But all right. Looking at this and looking at all the noise that's in this, as entrepreneurs, we build up a lot of expertise around what we're doing, but a lot of times everything else kind of falls away and it becomes a very slog. Yeah. Maybe one or two properties. Yeah. Let's first talk about sort of the value of looking at something like HBG Capital. And then let's talk about like when and where someone should do, what are the things they should be looking at, and what does sort of that like process look like? So first, what's the value of, instead of owning a few properties itself, working with someone like HBG Capital?
Yeah, great question. And so there's a little bit of a kind of higher level here that you got to figure out what it is you want to do. I'm not here to say that my method or our investment thesis is better than anybody else's. And I think that's a big problem that everybody has, not just business owners. There's so much information out there and so many people saying that their way is the right way. I'm not here to go, you know, if somebody spends enough time and effort and their goal is to accumulate, you know, single family rental properties, you will eventually achieve the result you want, just like you did in your business. If you go after commercial real estate, right? Same thing. If you want to, you know, start and sell franchises. So I don't think that there's one silver bullet that's the best. It's picking one thing and getting really, really good at it. I'd argue that that's probably why your audience is so successful, is that's what they did. They didn't start five or six businesses. They started one. And so it's the same concept that worked to get them into their business where they are today. It's that singularity of focus. And there's two options you have when investing in real estate. You can decide to be an active investor or a passive investor. There's advantages and there's disadvantages of each. Being an active investor, probably the most culturally popular one are like fix and flip projects and single family rentals. Yep. That's kind of the one everyone sort of knows everything about. Yep. And so it's active, but I think the mistake a lot of people who get into it make is they think it's passive. They think it's mailbox money. That's what they've been told by people. What they're not told is all of the headaches that come with the things that go wrong in the middle of the night, the calls from the tenants. Even if you've got a great property management company, managing that property management company and following up with them. Hey, you know, why has it been 4 months and my property still doesn't have a tenant in it, right? There's still a lot of work, active management involved in that asset, but the potential upside is usually much higher than if they took a passive role and invested with somebody else, because they're the sole owner of that deal. They're an active owner. Yeah. They're the only ones. They get all the losses, but they all also get all the gains on it. So deciding whether you want active or passive, who we're a really good fit for, people who want a truly passive role. And so the vehicle that we use for a lot of our deals is a syndication deals. It's very similar to crowdfunding, where people are able to pool their money together and own pieces of an LLC in order to purchase larger, it could be anything from commercial buildings to apartment complexes to land to development. You know, we focus on the development piece, and it literally is hands off. So at most, they might spend 2 or 3 hours total on a deal, most of which is spending a few minutes every month looking at our updates that we send out. So when I say it's passive, it's truly a invest and all the work is taken care of for you. And so for business owners or anybody who's looking to create additional revenue streams, maybe you're somebody who you've got a lot of money in the stock market, a lot of money in your 401k, and you just know it needs to be diversified. There's just too much in stocks and you're kind of on a point where maybe you're trying to scale your business back a little bit. You don't want to retire, but you know that eventually you want to try to replace your business income with some kind of other income, and you want some consistency, and you might even want some tax benefits as well. Then, you know, this is a good option to consider, especially if you do your homework and the investment strategy of the sponsor, who is the one who usually is the one that puts the deal together and presents it to the investors, if their strategy aligns with what your strategy is. So, you know, like half of, I'd probably say half of our investors are local, just because they love Nashville. Like, they're real estate investors. They have single-family properties. They do private money lending. Like, they really like the story behind Nashville. And so a lot of what we're doing aligns with what their investment thesis is. And so it works out really, really well for those points.
Very cool. So when do you suggest, sort of, is this when an entrepreneur, you know, business owner is looking at this type of investment, like with you, do you kind of just focus on, well, here's the minimums? When do you suggest an entrepreneur, besides always, when do you suggest is a good point for an entrepreneur to look at something like this?
When they get to a point where they're trying to create passive income to live off is a very popular point. We've got people that are still in the accumulation phase, right? And they're trying to build.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It works for that too. But when you're trying to create a lifestyle where your investments pay for your lifestyle, then I would say that's usually the time that most people become very, very interested in real estate, because there's so many things. You know, for us, we've got, you know, pretty big payouts. We try to do, you know, sales cycles within 12 months, 15 months or less on some of our developments. Some of them take 2 years, but not just with us, but other people as well. You've got multifamily that can produce like quarterly cash flow. Some commercial stuff can do monthly cash flow. So there's so many unique vehicles in real estate in general that are designed to make somebody able to live off of the income that it generates.
And generally, like, just for HPG, where does it start?
So we do $50,000 minimums. If somebody's getting into the real estate syndication space for the first time, they'll see that that's usually what the minimum amount is. You know, if somebody can't invest that amount, we always recommend having an emergency fund of at least 6 months to a year's of living expenses saved. And we'll ask that on the calls. If you don't have that, then we're like, hey, look, this isn't a good investment. Make sure you've got your rainy day fund set. But $50,000, and it doesn't have to come from, you know, your taxable income. A lot of people don't realize that if they've got a 401k account, or they've got a Roth IRA, or a regular traditional IRA account, that you can convert into a self-directed account, and you can actually use those funds to invest in real estate. So I know a lot of people who have become very comfortable with real estate, taking on more of like an active role in it, and they literally just transitioned all their retirement funds into a self-directed account and started investing in real estate, because it's pretty cool when you can get a lot of these tax advantage. My favorite's the Roth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that Roth goes tax-free. I love, love, love that vehicle. It's great for real estate because you get these big swings sometimes, not all the times, right? All investments have inherent risk.
Yeah. You
always do your own due diligence. But people have been able to grow these massive wealth portfolios in the Roth because the tax advantages are so great. So it's pretty cool. I don't know many vehicles where I know people who, you know, will put down $500,000 in the Roth to buy a $2 million property. And then, you know, 2 years later, they sell it for $3 million. And then all that whole million they just made goes into the Roth, and it's all tax-free, baby. So there's a lot of really cool things that they can do. But most people can get started with $50,000. And if you've got that in a retirement account, we've got third parties that we can refer people to have a conversation to see if whether or not transitioning a portion of that into a self-directed account is.
So is this an accredited investor, or are you in, what is that crowd? There's the
accredited, non-accredited
structure.
Yeah. So we work with both. So there's 506B, there's 506C. Okay. I make a point to build a relationship with every single person that gets on the call, because we've got an invested interest in helping you build and create what it is you want to create. And so for that reason, not every deal we do may be a fit for you. So we spend time to build out your actual profile. What are your actual goals? Not just because we want to make sure that we're a fit, but there's a lot of people who are not, and I connect them with other people in my network that can give them the opportunities that they're looking for. And I've just noticed that when you do stuff like that, the universe pays it back. And if you add enough value to people, it'll generate referrals and it'll help grow your business.
Well, this is a passive investment for investor type. What are sort of the, is it a fee structure, or what is it? What does this look like? Yeah. From your, you know, side.
Yeah, so we basically raise money for, I think it's like four separate things. When we raise funds from investors to, let's say we're building, I don't know, neighborhood of 30, 40 homes, something like that. We raise funds for the down payment for the bank loan, the interest escrow account, liquidity and startup costs, the interest escrow account to make sure that we've got a performing loan for the life of the development. And then sometimes we might build some general contractor fees in. That basically goes to our construction company, and it's just designed to help out with overhead. So we don't make a whole lot of money off of it. It's just money to keep the lights on.
All right. And then are you getting 20% of the profit? You know, how are you making your money off of this? So then when the investor, it's like, oh, so I keep 80%, like a venture fund is 2 and 20. How does that work?
Yeah. So what we do, we structure it a little bit differently than what a lot of people do, is we do an 18% pref. That's what we've been able to deliver in the past based on the deals that we've closed so far. And so as we build and develop and sell these lots, or we build and develop and sell these houses, money comes back into the company and then gets distributed 100% to the investors until they get their principal back and their 18% you know, pref.
Made whole.
And once they're whole, our firm then profits on the remaining homes. So it's a little different where a lot of other people will do like a, they'll do like an 80% to investors, 20% to the GPs until they hit a certain amount. Then it goes to a 70, 30, 60, 40. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what if the deal doesn't perform as it was supposed to perform? The GPs still made money. We try to really put our investors first in the way that we structure the waterfalls.
Yeah. You're structured very similar to a lot of self-funded searchers, where it's like you are taking on the debt risk, you're taking on operational risk. Your investors get whole in their piece first, and then you take on longer term. Everything happens right, which is the whole reason we do these things, because we believe, and we've, as I've said, we crossed out some lines and done a few more calculations than just the basic level. Yeah, so that is good. And that's a good risk profile, because you need this to work for it to work for you. Mm-hmm. So it aligns very well to a long term. What's the general timeline that you're telling? You said, oh, yeah, it could be 2 years, you know, from these things happening. Yes, but from an investor, you're saying, oh, look, we expect this is going to be, is it just different products with different timeline allocations? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you'll get your money, you know, we target. Target being that wonderful word, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever.
Because we've got multiple exit strategies, right? Like it all starts with us working with the city to identify the parcels of land that are not the highest and best use, and then we'll rezone those. We don't buy anything until that's approved. So the value has to be in place for us to go. Now we spend probably, you know, 50 to 100 grand out of our own pocket and civil fees to get it there. And we're happy to take that risk and do that. But we actually don't deploy investor capital till it's done. So there's four different exit strategies. One is we could just land bank it. If it's an area where we want to buy the land and it's in the path of a lot of development coming, and we're buying it at a really good cost basis, so there's already a ton of equity built in, then we'll buy that. We'll sit and wait on it. Typically, you know, 2 years or less. But that's one strategy. The next is if we contract with a builder to sell them finished pads. So we do a lot of developments with like LGI Homes, Lennar, D.R. Horton. You know, Warren Buffett's famous for just investing like $900 million in Ryan Homes, Lennar, and D.R. And that's what he's betting on. He's betting on that entry-level housing space, right? So we'll develop land and we'll sell the lots to these entry-level builders. And typically the turnaround for that is 12 months or less. We buy the land, we put all the infrastructure in. Usually it's pretty big takedown, so they're buying at least half up front, if not the whole thing. So 12 months or less for those. If we're developing it and building houses, then 2 years or less, because it takes, you know, 6 to 8 months to do the land and another maybe 12 months to build and get out of all the homes. So if it's a vertical, then 2 years or less. And now if it's build to rent, this is one that we're really trying to get into. We're trying to figure out how to hang on and hold more assets long-term with ourselves and our partners and create more consistent cash flow is typically a 3 to 7 year hold period. So that one, just depending on where it is and, you know, what the projections are, that's going to be a much longer hold time frame.
Okay. One last question, because when I look at this, you had mentioned there are tax advantages, not just from putting it rough, but like, yeah, I'm always seeing like anything, I'm getting targeted with a gazillion. Like, what's the phrase? If you own, you know, rental property through whatever, it's
depreciation
or any type of real estate. Accelerated depreciation. Is that something you guys do? Do you have tax structures as part of the InVit, or is it more, are you looking at a more general appreciation cycle? Like, what happens from that point of view?
It applies to the longer term holds. When you're doing a cost segregation study and seeing what you can accelerate, when you're, you know, developing a piece of land or building houses, you're not going to get that depreciation piece because you're only doing it in 12 months, 15 months or less. So it doesn't There's really make sense because you're going to have to recapture that in like 12 months. So it's not a great depreciation strategy. So try to make up for that in our pref offering. That way our pref is pretty attractive to, you know, what you find out there on the market. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're really wanting to get into build to rent. And, you know, for people who are considering real estate, like, there are so many great multifamily operators out there that offer depreciation for that. So, you know, just because we don't doesn't mean it's not out there. There's a ton of great opportunities for depreciation where you can offset your income. Definitely have a conversation with your accountant. I'm not a licensed CPA, so, you know, don't take any of my advice at face value. Yeah. Have a conversation with your accountant to make sure that the depreciation that you get is going to actually apply to you. So make sure you don't just assume that you're going to get the depreciation if you invest in some deals, because there's buzzwords that do have to apply, like the real estate investor status. So you've got to have a certain status sometimes to be able to qualify to offset the depreciation against your income. So just have a conversation with your accountant before jumping into the whole depreciation thing.
Look, I've kept you long here, Brandon. This has been fascinating, both what you start, you know, what you've been creating, what you have, and sort of the value as, you know, any type of investor, but specifically for a business owner, where we generate sometimes, you know, depending on our business models, we generate these cash flows that, yeah, since we talked about taxes way earlier, can be a very less fun part of the business experience of doing that. So it is looking at ways of investing and kind of creating that diversity is always fascinating. I think you've created something that definitely is going to give me a lot of thought and look at. And I know a lot of my audience will probably be very interested in exploring. So what's the best way they could, one, learn more about what you're doing, but then also HPG Capital, the space, how can they learn more about you and HPG Capital?
Yeah, you know, if you're somebody who's interested in building a legacy, retiring and making an impact, you can go learn more at our website, hbgcapital.net. That's like Harry Bob Gary Capital.net. I joke that the .com was already taken, so the only thing they had was the .net. But we have a ton of free resources on our website. There you can sign up for an ebook, 100 Questions Business Owners Ask Before Investing. I put together that ebook and gave it for free for one reason. After one phone call I got, it was from a current investor of ours who asked if I'd be willing to hop on a call with his friend. And he explained that he had a real estate deal that did not go according to plan. And he asked if I'd help him. I said, sure. Yeah. So I'm on the call with him, and he had lost probably like $160,000, I think it was, on a deal in California. All of it, the guy stopped returning his phone calls, and he's like, dude, what are my courses of action? Should I sue him? Should I do this and that? And just looking at his deal and the paperwork wasn't right. He wasn't secured. I mean, he did everything wrong you could possibly do wrong, because he didn't know. He was so green to it. He did not know the questions that he should be asking. And so I left that call kind of down, and I put together that book with the intent that if I can prevent this from happening to just one more person, this would be a win. So you can grab that book on our website. There's a ton of other free educational resources if you want to learn more about this stuff. But they can add on our website. And then, you know, we've got our own podcast, Recession Resistant Real Estate Radio, where we do a lot of broad topics and talk about what we're doing.
Well, look, we will make sure that in the show notes for this, our socials, and in the newsletter when this episode comes out, we'll put those links in for everyone here in the audience, because the site hbgcapital.net has some great resources. I think it's worth diving into and exploring a lot more. So Brandon, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks, man. It has been a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
This is cool, because we spend so much time trying to build our business through the site. It's like, what do we do and what are the ways to do it? And just finding different ways of thinking about it and seeing, okay, does this fit with what we're doing as entrepreneurs? Is really cool. Cool, fun thing to do. So everyone, thank you very much for listening today. Please, like always, if you enjoy the show, if you think we created some value, Brandon really kind of gave some great insight into how to think about investing as a business owner, how to look at real estate, share this episode with someone you think will also get some value out of listening to this, and also suggest that they subscribe on their podcast listening platform of choice. And otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great day, and I'll talk to you again soon. All right. Bye, everyone.